nervous?
No.
Where's your answer?
Dennis Beckham, that's the ball on! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham! Dennis Beckham!
Oh, no! Oh, yes! He missed it!
Welcome to the Suffering from Joy podcast. My name's Devin. A little late this week, and a few announcements ahead of time. We had a couple notes from our producer about things we keep forgetting to do and remind you guys of. Obviously, please follow us on social media at Suffering Pod, Twitter, and Instagram. There's some really good stuff on there, some really tedious, fun back and forth that you'll see with some people. I also have a note here, and I'm reading the word, and it looks a little odd. Oh, we won a game. Okay, cool. So we beat FC Frisco 2-1 on Saturday. That's new and interesting. And here to discuss it with me today, Charles Peacock of the False Nine Texas. Charles, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good.
Good. Winning makes everything a little better. Sunshine's a little brighter. Song of the Birds a little sweeter.
Winning cures all.
Winning cures all. Also joining us today is Brad Tillery. Brad, how you feeling?
Well, I just went to the gym, and now I'm going to completely negate that by eating way too much Buffalo Wild Wings. So pretty good.
The people want to know, how was your Whataburger on Saturday?
Freaking delicious.
Absolutely. What'd you get?
Oh, so the most underrated best thing on the menu, that's a full-time item, which is the honey barbecue chicken shrimp sandwich with a sweet tea.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Unfortunately, Seth is not joining us today because he is in Bridgeview, Illinois, getting sleeted on. So,
yeah, I'm watching Seth. This game right now. There are players playing with gloves on and long sleeves. This looks very cold.
Good. It's like 85 here.
Yeah, so. I can look up the actual temperature and weather there in Chicago real quick, but it does not look pleasant as no. As the Fire 2 play forward Madison.
Yeah, no, that would be a hard pass for me, especially way out in the suburbs.
No, it is 36 degrees with a real feel of 28.
That's actually not that bad. It just sounds wet.
Yeah, a little sleet and snow throughout the game.
All right. Brad, you also did Choo Choo and Brews on Saturday. How was that?
Awesome, as always, but it reminds me every time that I am way too old to be day drinking that long anymore.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I skipped.
Yeah, Sunday did not feel good.
I had to rest up and go watch the Arsenal Man City game on Sunday, where I was like shaking the entire time. So I didn't need to have that in my body already. Let's talk about the game. We won. We tried to not win, but we ended up winning. Charles, any kind of quick hit analysis? Like, I thought we dominated and were well-deserved winners. You know, probably easily could have won by more, probably should have been up at halftime. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, this was a quintessential Josh Wolf game. This is what he wants every game to look like. We control possession and look very and look in control the entire time. We win, obviously, which most of the time is his goal. It helped that Dallas was without a couple of their top players and kind of generally played into Austin's hands by how they were kind of set up. They were set up to be kind of a low block trying to counterattack team and give up the ball, and they didn't really have the pace to take advantage of the center backs.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, not just like how bad they were, but how little they actually tried to like play. Half of their game plan just seemed to be like hoof it, you know, classic English route one, but like worse.
Yeah, like one of the weird things that I kept noticing was how deep Legette and Paul Areola were a lot of times when they got involved in the play. Like they were already, you know, back in their own half trying to do work. And it's like what you've seen work against Austin over and over again is when you press up on them. You know, Paul Areola is, you know, even when he's matched up against John Gallagher, will still, you know, usually create some scoring chances or score. And he was matched up against Hector Jimenez, and the Dallas coaching staff was like, we don't need to attack.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, they're going through a rough patch, and I haven't looked, but I assume they've got to be ahead of us in the Wooden Spoon rankings at this point.
They are.
Behind us, however you want to look at it.
They are definitely a little bit behind us. Not by much. I think they're 2 points behind us. They have – well, no, they're three. They have 3 points. We have six. So there's three teams below us in the West right now. It's Dallas, our opponents this week, San Jose, and then Seattle. who still has Seattle does not have a win, which is one of two teams in the league without a win right now.
That's impressive. Who's the other one?
It is New England.
Oh yeah, I did know that. Huh.
Who got trounced last night by
Tigres, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably not looking up for them then, but you know, they might be getting a new stadium, so we'll see. It was obviously the first match of the new Copa Tejas rules, which I don't think we need to really jump into, but it's sort of like a weighted average of games played. Brad, did you get to see the Copa Tejas before the match on Choo Choo and Brews?
I only saw it. I saw people drinking out of it.
I was going to ask if you drank out of it.
I did not. Kind of reminds me of like, I didn't go to Catholic church, but I've been to some weddings and stuff. And it kind of reminded me of the priest who has to drink all the wine at the end. And it's just everybody's backwash. So I was not doing that. But there was enough people pouring beers and drinking out of it and having a good time with it. So yes, it made the trip and it was a fun day. As far as the game goes, but like, I'm kind of with you. My takeaway is that Dallas didn't want to play.
No.
Yeah, they had no interest. They were going in trying to get a 0-0 draw, and if they could steal a goal like they did, then awesome. But that was their entire game plan the other night. And when you're allowing us to just walk the ball into the attacking half, and I mean literally walk the ball up with no pressure on us, that invites us to play the exact kind of game that we want to play. And Dallas wasn't trying to do anything to disrupt the way we wanted to play. So I take less out of the win other than, hey, it's nice to actually win a game than most people are probably going to.
I don't think any of us are going to complain about a win. You know, I'm sure there are some, whatever the 12 people still left in the Wolf Inn crowd are running victory laps going, see, we can win. Like, we're really good. But yeah, no complaints about a win. I thought we played well enough. Like, obviously, there's still some holes, but definitely, I mean, the best we played all year.
Yeah, but end of the day, we still had to come back, right? Still needed a comeback to win, which was nice because we haven't had a comeback win since 2022. We haven't won. I think the last time we did that was in 2022.
Yep.
But it was underwhelming, I think, for me. Now, we probably could have had a couple of more goals, and I think 3-1 to 4-1 on the score line looks a whole lot better and makes you feel a whole lot better. And odds are, you know, getting ahead of ourselves here, but this coming week against San Jose is a game we should win at home against an inferior team who is missing two of their better players, including one of their absolute best players in Jackson Yule this week because he got red carded. Does that still make me feel better about where we're headed? Not particularly just yet. Like, I need to see things done on the road, and I need to see us win games at home against at least equal or slightly better competition.
Yeah. And I mean, we've never beaten San Jose, right? So,
correct.
Good time to start. I actually went into this game pretty confident we were going to win. And part of that was, we talk a lot about Josh Wolf being Greg Berhalter's protege. And Berhalter has this like nice but kind of annoying thing where you think he's about to like finally face some consequences for being, you know, a shit coach. Then he goes and he kicks the shit out of Mexico, and he does it all the fucking time. And I think Josh is kind of good at pulling out these occasional like Copa Tejas wins, at least this year and last year, when he really needs them. So yeah, I was pretty confident going in.
But even the two games last year, right? You look at them with a fine tooth comb. The ones that we won, they were against Houston and Dallas when both teams were depleted due to international duty.
Yep.
So, when was the last time we beat either one of those at full strength? You got to go back 2022.
Yeah, playoffs.
Yeah.
Again, yeah. It was nice, though, to actually get a win.
The yell that I let out at full time was cathartic.
I think the people in my section, you might have actually been able to hear me, could hear me yelling at Paul Areola the whole game as if he was Paul Feinbaum.
Unfortunately, I could not hear you because I had Frisco offbeat drums in my ear the entire night.
So I wanted to touch on that. Charles, how did you guys, you were in the supporter section, right?
Yes.
Could you hear the like Frisco people at all, or were you too drowned out by the La Murgra?
Way too drowned out. I mean, I could kind of see them like hold scarves up and kind of like moving around at a distance, but I couldn't hear their drumming at all, and I couldn't hear them chanting at all.
Okay, yeah, I started rolling my eyes as soon as they did the stars thing during the national anthem. And then it got worse. Like, I really like being able to have, like, away fans and kind of away atmosphere, but if all you're going to do is, like, hit a fucking drum, not really chant and just yell FC Dallas every now and then, what's the fucking point? I mean, Brad, you're closer to them than I am.
No, I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. They had maybe once. I think the only song I heard them actually sing in unison was Esta Noche, which is pretty universal. But beyond that, no, they just drummed and their fans were just up there with their arms folded or on their phones.
Yeah.
Like, pretty easy to see.
I'm all for away atmosphere, but, like, create it. Don't just, like, hit a fucking drum. That's just annoying.
Yes.
And you said you had earplugs?
I did. And it was the first time I brought earplugs to a Copa Tejas match. I finally invested in some. The ones I bought supposedly took down the noise by, like, 25 decibels, and I could tell. Like, you could still hear the drums and easily hear the atmosphere in the crowd, but it felt more like a normal game as opposed to blowing my ears out all game long. It was huge.
Nice. I guess we'll get back into the game. I think we had more shots in the first half than we, or shots on goal in the first half than we had, like, in a game all season. So that was nice.
There's a goal by Chicago.
Nice. Charles, do you feel we should have been up at the break, or were you kind of like, eh, we're pushing, it's fine?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I don't feel like Austin went, like, full horseshoe of sadness. But it definitely had that feel to it. Like, there was a little bit more incisiveness. It's just always kind of that worry of your team's playing well and holding the ball and looks like they should be up, but they're not actually putting any goals on the scoreboard. The one kind of interesting thing is how Austin's only scored once so far this year in the first half, and all their other goals have come in the second half, which is kind of a weird divergence from last year where it seemed like the team always ran out of gas toward the end of the game. So that might just be, that's just something they'll kind of like keep an eye out for of future matches of first half versus second half offense.
Yeah. And it felt like we really just sort of had the lay of the land. Like that's the easiest Danny's had at playing the ball out of the back in forever and ever and ever.
Yeah. They just, I think some of it is Dallas's team construction is very strange in the sense that, like, they spent a bunch of money on getting Peter Musa, but he doesn't really fit with the rest of their players. Like, he's a big, strong nine that leads the line that you want to hit crosses into, but, like, they used to be a team that was built on having a lot of pace and counterattacking and pressing and getting up into teams, and that's not really what he's there on the field for. And so just this kind of weird mix of, like, players that don't really fit together, and then him and Jesus Ferreira both think that they should be the only ones shooting, and so when they're both on the field they don't pass to each other. The team just kind of, I don't know, that roster just doesn't make any sense anymore.
Like, it was put together by Ted Boley.
Yes, but somehow cheaper.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
I mean, we really don't talk enough about how Chelsea keeps spending like $1 billion every transfer window and they're still on the bottom half of the table.
It's really funny. Enzo Fernandez is cost what, like £140 million, and he spent 1 week in the top half of the table.
like that really legitimately takes effort. Like, you have to try really hard to be that bad.
Yeah, don't worry, they'll fire their manager and then start another rebuild and spend more money and it'll be fun. A good time. Brad, any kind of first half notes before we get into the spicy goals in the second half?
I mean, I felt like we probably should have been up 1-0. We had a couple of really good chances, including my moment of suffering, which was Alex Ring seeing nobody.
Oh my fucking God.
And not shooting the fucking ball. But we had a couple of really good chances. Seba nearly hit a incredible PK or free kick that just missed going upper 90. I think there was another play in the first half too where we got super close on a ball whizzed through the box. So
Ring hit one off the upright.
Yeah. So I felt like the only thing I wish that we would have done a little more of in the first half, I felt like it took 15 to 20 minutes for the team to realize that Dallas had no interest in playing.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, and then started really trying to attack and turn the heat up on it. Had we figured that out in the first 5 or 10 minutes, which was plain as day from where I was sitting, I felt like we probably could have turned the gas up on them a little earlier and probably snagged a goal in the first half.
Yeah, and I mean, were either of you surprised that our good friend Riggles didn't start? I didn't expect to see Rigotti out there starting, but
I'm less surprised that he didn't start and more surprised that he didn't play at all.
Yeah.
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 Same.
Because I was going to say, on our last podcast, we were talking about wanting to give Owen a shot on the right side. So we got what we wanted. And I felt like that worked out. But I'm stunned that, you know, it's weird in this league when a healthy DP doesn't play a single second on a week's rest.
Yeah, and it's not like we're, you know, churning out a ton of talent there either to keep him on the bench. No, I am, you know, we had talked about Owen, and I always like playing a guy who seems a little jilted from his last team, which O'Brien definitely did. So look good to me.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference that you see between the two of them is that whenever O'Brien gets the ball, he's always looking up and he's always trying to take on the defenders when he's one-on-one, which is kind of like the goal of the system in a lot of ways, is to isolate the wingers on the fullbacks. And Rigoni just doesn't do that anymore. He kind of gets the ball and he kind of pushes forward a little bit and passes it back. And like O'Brien always tries to make something happen, or even if he does push forward and like pull it back, like he will at least push to the byline and force the defense to collapse all the way back before passing it back out. And that makes a big difference.
Well, and he's like a pace in behind threat too. So they have to drop deeper.
Yeah, and I feel O'Brien's a little too fast for our team in certain times and ways. Cost us a goal, right? And we'll talk about – I know we're going to get into the second half here in a minute, but as much as I love his pace and his ability to stretch that back line, he seemingly doesn't pay attention to what's offside too often.
No, it's definitely something he should – have worked on and be working on in the future.
Yeah.
And I usually get a little defensive of wingers on these because I think a lot of the time, especially for us, the ball's just played late. I think he just doesn't pay attention.
Yeah. I mean, the goal that he rolled in that got called off was – that would have been a really easy play to stay back on.
I think he was excited to score against Frisco, his old team, and then just didn't brain shut off for half a second, and it happens.
I'm still not convinced he was offside.
Oh, I watched it back in live. I was, you know, 95% sure.
I was sure live because it happened in front of me. And then when I went back and watched it again on TV, he's absolutely off.
So, okay, but we're sure that he was the one who was called offside, not the pass before?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if we're sure of that, but he was definitely off. He was ahead of the man on the ball. But yeah, I guess let's jump into it. And since we're already kind of talking about it, the Frisco goal, I have watched the English championship like a ton, and I've seen this exact goal scored like 1,000 times. So I knew exactly what was going to happen as it was happening. Essentially they basically like just hoof it deep and both center backs, instead of one dropping off, take the second ball, try to win the header. They don't. Ball goes through, guy runs on, dribble, tucks it in, goal. Everybody's head drops. Charles, what were you feeling or thinking at that exact moment? And yes, you're allowed to swear.
I mean, I think the thing that we don't, that hasn't been talked about enough in that goal is part of the problem wasn't just the two center backs both going for the ball and losing a man. But, you know, everybody has that player offside except for John Gallagher, who keeps him on.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as Gallagher has enough speed to get involved to get in the play, like if you're going to keep him onside, you have to make the tackle at the end, but you didn't do that either.
Yeah. You either have to step or cover.
Yeah. You have to do one of those two things.
Yep.
And he didn't either. And so I thought that was really the breakdown in defense as much of anything. I mean, this is the first or second time that Cascante and Heinzeke have started together, and I think this is just something that happens when you have center backs who haven't played together very often. It's also the only chance that Dallas had of scoring a goal was just kind of like doing a weird header knockdown, because that's those are the only two players who were forward for that.
Yep. But I mean, it looked pretty grim at the time. It's certainly Julio and Heinz Eich's first start together, but Brad, any thoughts or recollections of here we go again or anything?
Oh yeah, it was absolutely, oh shit, here we go again. I was pretty convinced we were going to lose 1-0 at that point, honestly. I know we had dominated the ball and dominated possession, but when you are a team that struggles to score as much as we are and have been, it's hard to have faith, right? And I was pretty convinced that we had just given a game away that was imminently winnable at that point. It just felt inevitable, but it was nice to see a bounce back because we haven't really seen too much of that lately.
I was going to say heads were hanging in the stands, but the team bounced back pretty quick. I thought this was a weird passage of play because we got the ball forward, tried to cross it in. It looked like a clear as day handball, and I haven't been able to watch it back because there's like weird Apple being down stuff right now. I tried to watch it back and, you know, I haven't seen a replay, but I thought it was like for sure a handball. Everybody in my section thought it was a handball. It was pretty close to in front of us. We just sort of throw it in, cross it, and Julio sort of like half shoulders one, loops into the corner, goal. Nobody gives a shit anymore. But Charles, how did you see that passage of play?
Yeah, I thought it was very, it's very strange because even in the Apple broadcast, like they're still showing the replay, expecting Austin to take some time so that it can get reviewed, which I'm not 100% sure it got fully reviewed just based on like the little amount of time it got. I thought it was a handball. I thought even in the replay it was a handball, but it's one of those things that, you know, you take advantage of what the other team expects, which is delaying to do a quick throw in and then you score. And then everybody's like, eh, what happened before? Nobody cares. Like, we got a goal.
I believe the great sage of our time, the modern day Solon, Ben Wallace, says, ball don't lie. Brad, any thoughts here?
First of all, ball I believe it's all the time. Ball lies all the time.
Also, it's Rasheed Wallace who says that, not Ben.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
Yeah, as somebody who has been screwed out of playing for a national title, seeing their team getting screwed out of a basketball national championship appearance because of ball lying on a foul, yeah, and then the guy making all three free throws, ball lies all the time. It would look like a handball to me. Also, goal Miami. Inter is up 1-0 on Monterrey. I did not see who scored. It looked like a handball to me, and I immediately was screaming it up in the stands. But I thought, and I was listening to our friends over at Moon Tower earlier today, I thought they made a really good point, which is the throw-in was taken very quickly after that. And we just kind of caught Dallas napping a little bit.
Yep.
Which allowed Julio to find some space. And the header was just a little looping header kind of off his shoulder. He didn't really make great contact with it, but
we're not complaining.
Yeah, exactly. But Julio was able to go up and fight for a ball and snag one. And at least showed – I like that we just immediately came back down and scored within 3 minutes, right? It was – we didn't really let the goal get us down. We didn't let the missed handball get us down. It's just let's grind, let's score. And that seemed to change the entire energy from the team. And it was a fight back energy that we haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah. And I think that's the big takeaway for me in this game is, you know, normally you see heads hang and, you know, everybody start to droop and they do the, you know, start pointing at each other, but nope, just turn around and, you know, we can do the old cliche right after you score is the time you're most likely to get scored on, but like, whatever, if they fell asleep, we took advantage of it. Charles, any thoughts here?
I mean, it's a cliche for a reason. It's because like, that is what happens. A lot of times. Yeah, I mean, I agree with Brad. Like, they took a quick throw to take advantage of it, and it's not the prettiest goal, but, like, ultimately, like, they all count the same.
Yeah. You know, I'll take an ugly header or a beautifully worked 95 pass, whatever. You know, they're all one tally mark. Right after that, we kind of covered it a little bit. We get this beautiful ball through from Seba. Rubio runs onto it, nicks it forward. Basically, keepers all the way out. He can either shoot or pass. He chooses to pass. you know, I think O'Brien got happy feet and got excited, puts it away, crowd goes nuts, flag goes up. You guys worried we weren't going to get the winner after that?
Sorry, I was on mute there. No, I'm not, actually wasn't. I felt at that point, the field was pretty tilted in our favor, even more so than the first half. And I kind of just felt like, yeah, we missed that when we didn't get it, but we were flowing pretty well to the point where I thought we were going to catch another one somewhere.
Charles?
Same. It just, the momentum was too much on Austin's side, and Dallas had retreated so much, even at that point, that they were just trying to hold on as best they could. I felt like, if anything, Austin kind of like came off the gas a little bit and didn't attack as much as they could have.
Yeah. At that point, I was thinking three or four. But we did end up getting a winner a few minutes later.
You guys like need to announce, by the way, my B-dubs has arrived. I'll be back in 2 seconds.
All right. Well, while Brad is collecting his Buffalo Wild Wings, which I guess we can call and see if they want to sponsor us, I want to also shout out to our friends at El Farolito. The burrito boys from San Francisco made it to the third round of the U.S. Open Cup. Long live the cup. And I hope they continue doing well. You want to set the scene for us while Brad's getting his wings for how this goal comes up?
Yeah, the goal ends up, it's a really great moment of, and something that we don't see that often, of the striker really recognizing when there's space behind, and yes. Driussi also just like, I feel as though a lot of times like Driussi's playing a different game than everybody else just from a mental perspective, because he just sees things that everybody else doesn't.
Yeah.
And like, this is a great moment of having a striker who's smart enough and skilled enough to see that run needs to be made and making the run, and something that Austin hasn't had, I don't think ever really. And it goes to show like how much more of a playmaker Driussi can be if he has weapons around him who can make the runs that he sees, instead of him just kind of sitting there and being like, oh, that's open. Oh, he doesn't see it. I can't pass that ball.
So I was legitimately getting frustrated before this goal, because I was sitting in the stands going, why is Driussi playing further back than Alex Ring from the box at times? And then like 2 minutes later, Sebas decides to put one right on Rubio's head. But yeah, it's nice that to see that we actually have a pairing of guys who seemingly understand what each other wants to do. And Rubio especially just brings a different dimension to this team that I don't know that we've ever had at that nine position.
Yeah, he's very intelligent, makes nice runs, always going at it, full energy guy, and he's kind of a fucker too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So kind of having all of that stuff together. And I mean, this one, he sort of like nods at Driussi like, hey man, you see this too, right? And then Driussi puts it, you know, the one spot he can get to it, and there's pace on it, and that's a hell of a header. I think it looks a lot easier than it is.
Yeah, it's also a really good finish by Rubio. I think going back to what Brad said about Driussi dropping deeper than Ring, I think that's intentional, in the sense that Austin likes to have Driussi arrive late into the box to let him kind of see where the space is and move into it, more than they want like Ring doing that. And so I thought it was, it always kind of looks funky and it kind of seems counterintuitive, but it makes sense from that perspective if you're trying to let your player pick and choose his spots of where he can get open.
Well, to illustrate your point there, it was in the first half maybe where Ring whizzed one across the box and Driussi was there back at the spot, just standing there at the spot with nobody around him. Would have been an easy goal and Ring didn't see him. So,
yep.
Yeah, I think on that, like, there's two Austin players running into the box. It's O'Brien and Rubio, I think, and they're defenders. And I get the impression of just like, hey, hit in front of the box, and like, you know, there's four different players who are facing the goal when you put it in. Like, the chances of the Dallas defenders not accidentally scoring by themselves are really low. But at the same time, like, you have to have the awareness that like your guy is in the perfect spot to finish.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with kind of whizzing it across the zone of uncertainty. That's how, I mean, shout out to our FCTO friends who got their first win on Wednesday or Thursday of last week, Thursday. And we had three or four good crosses right at the end of the game where Jimmy just starts sending balls in, and then, you know, CJ links up with one, ticks in the back of the net. Like,
I mean, that might be the best long range cross we've had since Jared Stroud in season one on in this organization. I'm just saying. the way he was able to bend that ball around was spectacular.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll maybe get to see a little bit of him. I think he's at least a year in FCTO, but
sure.
He looks promising. But yeah, nice header. Those are really easy to like either put off goal or hit straight at the keeper, but down and keep it on net, and there it is.
Yeah, I think one of the things that came to mind about Rubio is that like he's coming off an injury, and he was playing for a Colorado team that, frankly, last year was bad, and they couldn't keep the ball, and they couldn't get possession or get the ball to him. But, you know, 2 years ago, he scored 18 goals. And, like, that's not easy to do in MLS. Like, that's more than any strikers ever scored in a season for Austin. So as long as he can stay healthy, like, he's got the ability and the smarts to be the kind of threat as a nine that Austin just hasn't had before. I mean, we're used to, like, Zardes kind of just, like, trying to run around and not being very successful at it. And Rubio's just at a whole different level than that.
Yeah, we almost had a Zardes goal right at the death there too, and then he just couldn't. He's trying, but like the wheels aren't there anymore.
Yeah.
Had he hit that like first time, I think he would have had a better chance at scoring it.
Yep.
Because the ball from Biru was really good. Like that's a really good ball from the left wing to get him open and behind the defense. But yeah, I mean, I think that's just. If Zardes has to do anything besides just hit the ball right in the net, like that's not really his strong suit.
No, but I mean, you know, we're going to need him to eat up some minutes, especially if we're going to be relying on Rubio. Got to keep him off the field and keep him healthy. So it is what it is. Any other big notes you guys want to make on the game?
No, I thought it was kind of just a straightforward game, right? It was,
yeah,
it was a deserved win. I need to see them back it up this week. You know, we haven't been taking care of business at home, so and it's easy to forget that this is a very front-loaded schedule at home that we're going to pay the piper on down the road. It's already be our seventh game and fifth at home coming out this week. So you've got to be able to beat San Jose and get 3 points. If you do that, you can buy yourself a little breathing room because what does that put you at? 9 total through 7 games?
Yeah.
Finding one out of the 3 after that, it's not the easiest task in the world considering where we have to play. You know, on the road at St. Louis, on the road at Houston, and then back against the Galaxy, who look like a potential MLS Cup team. So, you know, that whole are they going to get to 10 points in 10 games question is still very valid right now.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody had, like, high expectations for this season, but we've always kind of said, you know, just sort of hang around until we can get reinforcements in the summer window and, you know, beat San Jose, maybe steal a point in the next 3, you know, steal a game here or there. Like, we're in the conversation, I guess.
Yeah, so one of my kind of worries is I feel as though, like, early on in the season, we kind of looked at the schedule a little bit differently in terms of, like, difficulty of opponents. But, like, you look at it now, and it's like, you know, we played Seattle away in a really ugly match. Seattle hasn't won a match yet. You know, we beat Dallas at home. They're in 12th in a 14-team league. We drew St. Louis. They're 10th. You know, Austin's currently 11th. You know, just based on form, like, the teams we're playing who we expected to be better just aren't. You know, Orlando City's in 13th in the East. Mm-hmm. Really the only one who's kind of as good as we kind of expected is Philly, and they're still in 7th. So it's not as been as difficult of a schedule as we thought coming off, and I kind of am worried that Austin hasn't banked more points at this time.
Yeah, but I mean, it's MLS. It'll all shake up, and a lot of those teams are stuck in CCC hell, too.
Yeah, Philly's rounding back into Philly. I mean, they got a nice little 2-0 win last week against Minnesota after a win the previous week on the road. Like, I think Philly's becoming Philly again. and what we expect them to be. Everybody else, though, has been bad. Like, Orlando's been really bad. Now, how they play coming off of finally being out of CCC and finally have everybody back from international duty, the next few weeks is really going to tell you what you have in Orlando.
Yeah.
All right, you guys ready for the funnest question we're going to do today?
Let's do it.
Charles, I'm going to let you go first. How long did it take you to no longer be happy that the regular refs are back?
You know, they both have a lot of goodwill by coming out and immediately like applauding the supporter section. But I immediately was just kind of like, oh, we're definitely getting a penalty today. And then there was a foul in the box that I clearly thought was a penalty that didn't get called. And immediately I was just like, oh, yeah.
Is that like Obreon getting shoved from behind?
Yeah. I think it ended up leading to a Haas yellow.
Maybe it was Owen. I don't remember.
Owen. We haven't talked about Owen, who played a really good game on Saturday night.
Yeah. There was one that they had like a really long review on, and we all thought we were going to get a penalty, and they never, you know, they didn't even send the guy to the monitor.
Yeah, that was the one that I was talking about, and just kind of like, oh, so we're okay. We're still pro level refereeing. That's great.
Yep.
But I will say, like, the one good thing, especially in talking about the Paz or Paez or however you say his last name, you know, in the first half, there was nearly like an actual fight.
Yeah.
Between him and Rubio. And I can't, and, you know, something we've talked about week after week is how the replacement refs weren't able to really control the match in terms of like the players and what was going on in the pitch. And I really do think that like there possibly could have been like a legit kind of fight or some kind of like scuffle. Had we had referees who weren't as capable at handling the game as the ones we had.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was also frustrated with the penalty, but that's a very good point about the Paz. And like, that was weird. Like, Paz came after him and then Rubio kind of went down easy, but like, he also, you know, was like really unnecessarily going after Rubio. So an experienced ref, it was kind of nice to have. And like you said, kind of take the temperature down. Brad, what'd you have to say here?
I honestly didn't have a point where I got pissed off at the refs that mad the other night. I thought the ref called an okay game. I thought the ARs were solid. You could tell the game was just being called in a cleaner fashion, was less disjointed. The ref positioning was in the right spot. So I was very, very pleased.
Yeah, I thought the AR on our side was out of position a fair amount, where like he was not really trying to run to the like back defender or anything. He was just sort of like, oh shit, I forgot I'm supposed to be over here. And like, I don't, you know if he blew any calls or anything, but felt like there were a couple offsides against us that maybe they could have let go and then looked at later. But yeah, it was nice that they came out and kind of applauded the supporter section. But you know, we kind of covered the other penalty shout that we had, and you know, the ball ended up in the back of the net 30 seconds later. So yeah, no big complaints on my end.
No, and I'm glad that they got taken care of. It sounds like obviously they didn't get everything they wanted, but some pretty significant pay raises and health insurance type stuff. So I'm pretty happy for the refs that they got what they needed.
Yeah, they get first class on the last day of the season in playoff games, moving on up in the world. So I, you know, we talked about kind of the initial like battle lines. I think all of us were mostly on the ref side here.
What does first class on Sun Country look like?
I don't know. Closer to the front. They let you keep the whole can of soda. I don't.
Because I don't know if you guys have ever flown on a Sun Country plane. It's not overly comfortable, and that's what we fly our team on every week. Yeah. It's those like really thin plastic chairs, kind of like are not. Kind of really thin chairs with the veneer covering that just aren't that comfy at all.
So. Are we still nominally sponsored by KLM?
I have no idea.
I don't either. We have an official sponsor for everything, so who knows? You guys want to get into the fun stuff?
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah, well, since Brad couldn't wait to jump on it, we're gonna go ahead and do stocks rising first, and I'm going to go first and say Owen Wolf, because Brad really wants to talk about it. I thought Owen was very measured, and you know, we talked about him kind of playing out on the wing, and he's also dropping in midfield a little bit more. And I think one thing we don't notice as much when he's playing in that deeper mid role that we see a lot more going forward is he has an eye for a pass and a good cross. And, you know, we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier. Like, if you're putting the ball in dangerous areas, good things can happen. Like, I don't just want us to, like, whack it in there, but we talked a little bit about it with Driussi and Rubio, too. Like, he sees runs that I don't think some of the other guys on our team will see.
Yeah, that play that we talked about earlier where Ring fizz went across the middle in the first half and probably should have cut it back to Driussi just a little bit at the spot.
Yep.
That pass that Owen, the ball that Owen played, just a little touch ball over the back line, playing Driussi into the box was pretty. And we don't really have guys on the team that can do that outside of him and maybe Driussi.
No, and he had a couple of really good, like, switch balls that weren't, you know, like, oh, my God, like, highlight reel, you know, this is going to lead to a goal stuff. But they're very useful passes and help, you know, three, four, five further passes down the possession help out a lot.
Yeah, he does a lot of little things that help unlock getting behind the back line.
Yep.
And I if he's going to play that kind of game out on the wing, I want him to stay out there because he was – it was one of the more effective performances we've seen out of him in an Austin uniform.
Yeah. I mean, if Owen's playing that well, we have bigger problems to fix in the team other places. So, like, stick him there until we can get to him.
Yeah.
Charles, anything to add, or do you want to do your stock rising?
I would just add that one of the things that Owen does is he really does try to push the defense back. He really does provide the kind of verticality that his dad has probably tried to beat into him since he was like 5 years old.
Ruthlessly.
Ruthlessly. To the point, I mean, the only thing that really holds him back from being like a really great MLS winger is that he's just doesn't quite have like the top end speed.
Nope.
To really unlock the defense, but he's at least going to make the defense worry about him getting behind.
Yeah.
Which we don't always have. My stock rising was actually going to be going back to the 2022 midfield.
Yes.
I was just like, hey, let's stick Danny at the six and Ring and Driussi here at the dual eights or whatever you want to call them. And, you know, Danny's going to be on the ball when the center backs aren't and let him just orchestrate things and just kind of get back to that, to what worked that was completely abandoned in 2023.
Yeah, and I think a lot of this was, you know, Dallas, but it felt like every time he touched the ball deep in our end, like the Red Sea parted and he had the entire goddamn field to run through.
I just don't think they had the pace to compete with him. Like, yeah. That's a situation where, like, not having Ferreira really hurts them. Because Ferreira could potentially have kind of done that for them. But without him out there, like, they just don't have anybody who can do that.
No, and I mean, Danny made some nice, you know, first touches and moves to, like, beat a guy. But like you said, like, they don't have anybody who catches him once he gets a step. Like, Sebastian Legette is not running him down.
I don't think Sebastian Legette can run me down.
We'll see. Maybe. Yeah, that's a good shout. Brad, any stock rising you want to do?
I mean, we talked about it already, but having an actual number nine for the first time in this club's history, that feels like a threat every week.
I believe he's tied for the club lead in goals now. Him and Julio both have two.
Yes. But it's more than just scoring goals. I think it's just constantly being in good spots, constantly being a pest to the other team. And you could tell even in the first half, you mentioned that the brawl that nearly happened, like getting under the skin of the opposing goalkeeper. He does a lot. Rubio does a lot of things that may not show up on a stat sheet, but that you have to consider where he is in the field at all times. And that opens up space for Driussi.
Yeah. And Rubio does this thing that I don't think our nines have really ever done consistently. They've done it, but I can't remember if it's Alan Shearer or Gary Lineker who has this quote where essentially they, you know, somebody said, oh, wow, what a great run. Like, how'd you know to make it? And he basically says, well, I've made it 15 times already this game. Just the ball wasn't coming to me yet because they had to pull it out. The pass wasn't available, whatever. So, like, even if the pass isn't necessarily going to be on that time, you got to be ready to make the run and make the defenders think. And then when your opportunity does come up, be there to finish it. And I think Rubio's doing that a lot more than you've seen any of our past nines do ever. So, yeah, there we go. You guys ready to do stocks falling?
Let's go.
All right. I went first last time. Charles, you want to go first here?
Yeah, my stock falling, assuming it can continue to fall, is Rigoni. Like was kind of discussed earlier, like a DP billing was essentially a healthy scratch in this league. is really bad. Like, that does not happen, especially not playing, just like not playing any minutes in a game that you're winning. It just goes to show that. And also that the team looked better without him out there. Like, yes, as a winger combination, like, O'Brien and Wolf provided more than he does. And when you look at his salary and just the value of being a designated player in MLS, like, I'm not sure his stock can get any worse, but he'll probably try.
Yeah, if he's given an opportunity, he can always impress us with his stock falling a little bit more. I had O'Brien as like a mini stock rising. Obviously, you know, some bigger names out there, but if he's playing as well as he did, you know, maybe he has a little extra pep in his step against Frisco. But, you know, I don't see any reason to throw wriggles out there if O'Brien's going to play like he did last game.
Yeah, there's no point in trying to... There's no point in trying to change out what worked last week, unless you think that, unless there's like some like practical reason why you thought San Jose would be able to provide something different. And based on who's out for them and how they play, I don't think they can.
I think he's the fourth choice at the wing right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind Finley kind of rotating in here and there, but I still think Finley is more of a, or should be more of a bench player for us. Like, you bring him on when the other guy's tired and he'll maybe have that extra step, and he's sure, a pretty good decision maker. He just doesn't quite have the burner pace he used to.
I think Finley would be really useful if paired with O'Brien or paired with somebody on the left who's more of a crosser of the ball, because mm-hmm. he is so good at getting in the back post and providing like just like a person there to hit the ball off of. But if you don't have that on the left wing, then he loses a lot of his value.
Yeah. Brad, stock falling?
I mean, it was Rigoni. That was the one I had listed.
All right, we were all going to pick Rigoni. Pick someone else.
Honestly, everybody else played a pretty solid game. I didn't have anybody that I was going to, I think, hurt themselves on the field when it came to up or down, or come down, rather, on Saturday night. But the very real absence of Rigoni not finding playing time is a big talking point that not enough people are paying attention to.
Yeah. I think the only other one I really had is the, you know, Seb has quit on the team narrative. Cause he looked a lot fitter than I was expecting on Saturday. Kind of back to his old tricks. I don't know if he's 100% or, you know, going to crash the gate for the MVP or anything like that, but he looked very closer to 2022 than we've seen in a while.
Yeah, it was nice to see Dreyusi looking like Dreyusi. I still, not just him, but the whole team, I still need to see this team play well against another squad that wants to try to play defense, though.
Sure, but I mean...
Try to play defense for more than a third of the field, as opposed to, you know, letting us walk the ball into the half.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been crying out for, can we just have one game where we play well, like, most sure. or the whole game? And, okay, we did that. Now we got to take the next step and the next step. But step one's done, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
It is theoretically possible. All right, Brad, your moment of suffering?
Okay. It was, we already touched on it, but it was in the first half where it's Alex Ring on the right side of a box. 12 yards from goal, him versus a keeper, and then not even shooting the ball?
So I shit you not, in real time, that Simpsons clip started playing in my head of the to the center, to the wing, to the center, to the wing, holds it, holds it, holds it, holds it, holds it, holds it. Like, I watched that replay again today, and like, I thought I was just, you know, over-exaggerating with how long he had it because I was in the stadium, but like, yeah. No, he had the ball for goddamn ever.
Which, the funniest thing to me was when the team released their highlight video from the game, one of the highlights they showed was Alex on the ball with the video from behind him showing exactly how much space he had to shoot just between him and the keeper.
Put your fucking laces through it. Jesus.
I was just like, oh, I won't know that that's a really good one to put in there, because I screenshotted it, put it in Slack, and I'm like, what the hell is this man thinking right here? That man needs a goal or a big assist or something to get some confidence back in him.
Well, he did have a shot that was kind of similar to his New England goal last year, where he like hit it off the upper 90. So it's not like he was scared to shoot. I just have no idea what he was doing.
Well, yeah, and also like the one that he hit off the post, like that was just the first time, like, again, put your laces through it. And it just, every time our team takes extra dribbles, just disaster happens.
We all die a little inside.
Yeah.
Is that too grim for this podcast? We did win. Charles, what was your moment of suffering?
My moment of suffering was that when Dallas scored, the supporter section was again singing Feliz Feliz, which made me not Feliz.
You were not very contento?
No, I was very uncontento or non-contento. And I feel as though like that's already happened like a couple times this year, to where I'm kind of worried that like that song might just like not be cursed, but like cursed. I do have to admit that like one of the things that I enjoyed was that the fans collectively decided that we weren't going to sing that song after being scored on. And it took La Merga like a few seconds, like maybe up to like 20 to 30 seconds until they just like gave up, because they realized everybody else was like, no, we're not singing this right now, before they like went into like a different song.
Just stop and it, so everyone.
So just shout out to like all the people on Facebook who complain about the song is not reacting to the game, or we finally did it and none of them have said anything because they didn't notice.
I'm never worried about the Facebook group getting a stock rising here, but that's probably about as close as we're going to get. Yeah, for me, it was finding out on like, this is Monday, it might have been yesterday, that people actually like Paul Areola. I didn't know that was possible, because to me, he's like one of, if not the most hateable player in MLS. And a lot of that, I guess, for me at least, is U.S. national team stuff. But yeah, I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts on our good friend Paul?
Yeah.
Naming his daughter after his jersey number, but spelled wrong.
No, I think Paul Areola falls into that, like, not good enough for the national team, but like good MLS player level that
with Dallas Sebastian really Legette.
Yeah, like, I mean, Ferreira, Legette, and Areola is kind of like the triumvirate of that. If they could only get Brad Guzan in goal, that would really make it good for them. But yeah, like, I don't think he's good enough to hate, and it's not like he like did the like jersey celebration the way Ferreira did.
Yeah.
I'll never not think of the picture of Areola sitting on the field after cups were thrown at him, and him just being like, "Why me? Why would you throw them at me?" That always just makes me laugh.
Yeah, it's a fantastic photo. Yeah, I don't know. Like, that was a fun game. I don't think there was a ton of like tactical nuance we need to talk about, but. Anything else you guys think we need to get in here? We kind of did a little bit of a preview on San Jose. Talked a little bit about FC Toe.
We forgot to talk about Hector Jimenez.
I was almost going to say that. So why don't you take it away?
I know that like a lot of people kind of make fun of like Hector Jimenez as being old, or like, why did we sign this guy, or blah, blah, blah. And like, it goes to show that like, he can still put in a shift in this league. And as a backup at his salary, like, that's valuable. I was surprised that Dallas didn't try to attack him more, but he also kind of brings the, like, passing triangle structure that the system's supposed to have. And I kind of wish that him and I wish that he had been on the right to pair up with Owen, because I think him and Owen have that understanding in a way that the other players don't have, and I think you could have been even more effective.
Yeah, I actually thought, you know, looking at the team sheet, that they were going to be flipped, him and Gallagher, but it, you know, seemed to work out, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, Hector played well. I'm with you. I figured Gally would be on the other side. But, you know, I don't know that it's something that we can run every week with Hector. It might just be matchup dependent, but he was solid. And then Biru came in and put in a pretty decent little 20 minutes himself, including that ball to Zardes, right? So that ball to Zardes was really well done, that he couldn't finish on. So it's weird. I was thinking about this earlier in the week. Once we get Dessler and once we have Vicenin back, it'll be the first time ever in Austin FC history that I will not be worried about the depth on our back four.
No, and I was going to do a brief little shout out too. I thought, you know, like goal aside, we talked about it. Heinzeich was very solid.
Second straight week.
Yeah. I mean, he played well with Hedges. He played well with Julio. You know, maybe he's not like a top end, you know, long term MLS starter, but the guy's useful. I don't mind him eating minutes. It's better than sticking Ring back there.
Yeah, I mean, like we said when we got him, he started 20 something game or 40 something games in like 2 year span.
Yeah,
just a couple in the last couple of years. So it's not like he doesn't have experience in the league at the level. Him being able to spell Hedges at times to give the older guy a little break on occasion, having some rotation possibilities when we get into those midweek games here in May, it's a nice luxury to have. And then when Vaisanen comes back, we really do have a couple of sets of – we have decisions to make at the center back position, to be honest with you, on who plays every week.
Yeah, and I think with the heat around here, we're going to see some rotation. It's nice to be able to rotate.
Yeah, it feels good to actually have depth at the spots where we have really never had depth.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that'll kind of keep the injury bug away too, so we're not really, really pushing people.
Yeah.
Unless we need to. Charles, anything else you want to add?
No, I think it's going to be interesting to see who the first choice left back is when we have options between Gallagher, Kolmanich, and Biru.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder, too, how long it's going to take before we actually get, like, Dessler into the country and all that good stuff.
So, I mean, I realize we're missing Seth, so we're not really going to know the answer here, but, like, his contract with Toulouse ends in June 30th. But we can't – June 30th, but we can't bring him in until July 14th?
Yeah.
Yeah, it starts, like, mid-month, the transfer window.
I think you integrate him to the team with Leagues Cup. And then you'll see him play MLS games come August.
But here's my question there. It's not a transfer. It's a free agent signing. So does that still apply? Or can you sign free agents outside of the window?
I'd assume you can sign free agents outside of the window.
Like, I know in Europe, for European teams you can, but MLS is fucking weird, so.
But his contract probably runs through June 30th, though, right?
Yeah, end of June. But yeah. That's still 2 weeks that – before the window opens.
Oh, fair. I still think with that time, they'll only give him a little bit of time off too, coming off the French season, although he probably will have a month at June because Toulouse will be done at the end of May.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, whatever, sign him on the first and start his visa paperwork or whatever. Like,
yeah. I don't know. I feel like the first time we see him get run out is probably going to be Leagues Cup.
Yeah. I would say that's about right. But you never know.
It's fine. If you're going to give a guy a run out and we haven't played him in the tournament that I don't care about, it's fine. Yeah. Get it at home, get him used to the heat, and then let's have him ready for MLS play a few weeks later.
For the games that really matter. The late season Copa Tejas matches. yeah. No, I think that's about it. I do have to ask, Brad, what kind of wings did you get?
So I got Caribbean jerk, teriyaki, and spicy garlic.
Boneless or regular?
We went boneless because Carrie likes boneless.
Okay, that's a good answer.
Yes.
Seems fair. All right, well, on behalf of Charles, Brad, Brad's Wings, Whataburger, whatever food stuff we're going to be sponsored by next week, and Seth, who hopefully hasn't frozen to death in Bridgeview, Illinois.
Yeah, I'm looking for him on the still shot. I don't see him. So.
All right, well, that could be a good thing, could be a bad thing.
hopefully he's under an awning getting either a drink or food that is warm.
Well, the last time we didn't have Seth, everybody freaked out, so I got to keep updates on where he is.
Yeah, at halftime, Chicago 2 is up on Madison.
Okay.
Wait, 2? They're up on 1, right? 1-1, no, 1-0. Oh, you said Chicago 2.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
Let's not fucking do this. It happens every time, like when the announcers at FC 2 games say, Austin FC 2, 2, and people go, what? So let's not do that. Next time we go, I'll make sure to get a full rundown on Waffle House from Brad, too. But yeah, on behalf of Charles, Brad, and all of the other stuff I already said that I forgot, thanks for suffering with us. Bye.
Thomas here for Austin Jarrett Stroud. It's Diego for goodness! He has written his name into Austin folklore.
They just won't go away.
Oh, he hits the upright again! That's impossible!
The Bears' season's going to end on a double doink.
Altidore squares it. Dempsey's missed it. Donovan has it. From hope, there is glory!